Question, did you send an email today, update your Facebook page? What happens to that stuff when you're gone? Does it just live on in perpetuity? Who gets access to it? The question of online legacy is relatively new, but like the internet, it's growing. Did you know that there's a website that will send emails from you after you die? Others promise a kind of digital estate management service that will store your password information and carry out your wishes for who gets what. Facebook has an option to switch a profile to memorial mode so you can stay online and people hopefully will say nice things about you after you're gone. John Romano and Evan Carroll are co-authors of Your Digital Afterlife and co-creators of a website called thedigitalbeyond.com, which bills itself as the go-to source for archival, cultural, legal, and technical insights to help you predict and plan for the future of your online content. I know. Who knew, right? Welcome. Is this John?
Yes, I am. Nice to meet you.
And Evan, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
John, I'll start with you. You know, it's such an odd conversation, but we're thinking one with serious consequences. There have been legal cases. There was one of a soldier who died. The parents had a suit to get access to his email account.
Yeah, Justin Ellsworth was killed in Iraq, defusing roadside bombs, and all of his emails were the sort of the supportive emails that you typically see of soldiers, trading back and forth with family back home. Justin said he wanted to make a scrapbook of them, and when he passed away, his father decided he was going to make that scrapbook anyway. But when he went to Yahoo to get access to the account, Yahoo basically denied him access to his son's account. And his father is the legal executor of his son's estate, and even then, he had to battle in court for 6 months to get access. And he finally got access in the form of they printed out like 3,000 emails and sent him boxes full of paper. And that was the best he could do.
But on the other hand, Evan, I'm thinking people listening to this might say that's, exactly what his son had expressed. He wanted those emails in a scrapbook. But others might be saying the last thing I'd want is my parents in my email. And again, you have no control over that unless you've authorized something.
That's correct. Whenever you sign up for an email service like Yahoo Email or Google Mail, Gmail, you're accepting their terms of service. And some terms of service like Yahoo's actually say what happens after you pass away. And they have what they call a no right of survivorship or transferability clause, saying that your account cannot be transferred to someone else. So you accept those terms, and the way Yahoo looks at it is up to them to preserve the privacy of the deceased individual, because that's the agreement to which they've agreed previously. However, we're starting to see some change. For instance, in Oklahoma, there's a new law that just went into effect back in November that states that the executor of one's estate shall have access to their email and other types of online accounts.
Are other states doing that?
Yeah, actually, we've seen Connecticut, I believe, also has a new law that's doing the same thing, empowering the executor of the person's estate to access the person's online accounts. And it's actually a very powerful idea, but it's going to run headlong right into all these terms of service that people have signed. And we haven't seen a case yet where somebody in Oklahoma has gone up against a Yahoo's who is executing their terms of service in the state of California. So I think there's going to be a lot of legal battles in the upcoming years.
And so something that we advocate for is making sure you have a conversation with those who might be executing your estate after you're gone, and let them know what you want to happen, and figure out a way to share those passwords with them securely. And there's all sorts of ways you can do that. You can use online services that allow digital estate planning, or you can simply leave it in a file drawer and have a conversation with someone. So there's lots of options, but as with anything in life, a little bit of planning goes a long way in the end.
Well, I'm reading about one website. I'm reading on your website about Entrusted, Entrusted. It's a free online service. They allow you to list all of your assets on that accounts. These are online assets, digital assets, and decide if you want them transferred to heirs or deleted when you pass away.
Yeah, they actually have a service that they will go out and delete some of your accounts for you. And I think what we're trying to do basically is put everybody in control of sort of the destiny of their own, digital assets. Because deletion is really just as powerful a concept as preservation in the end.
Well, we want to talk more about all of this, but just to expand out, because people, I'm sure, right now are thinking, what else do I have? What else do I have? Apparently people who play online games might have real-world money stored on those games.
That's absolutely correct. As I see it, we're starting to become a more digital society, and commerce is conducted online. We're starting to see healthcare-related transactions and activities completed online. And there are all sorts of things that are becoming digital in our lives. So it's not necessarily just about the family heirlooms. There are some real business and other personal implications of this as well. We feel like what's lacking at the present time is our sort of legal structures haven't caught up to the digital life we're living.
Well, but let's be clear. We mentioned the court case.
Sure.
Parents sued to get access to their fallen soldier son's online emails. They won. So is that precedent setting? I mean, what is the law?
Well, interestingly enough, Yahoo didn't change their terms of service, and their policy is still exactly what it was before the case. So if it happened again, the next set of parents or the next person, the loved ones, would be in the same exact situation.
They'd have to sue.
They would have to sue to get access.
And from a practical standpoint, any individual is going to go through sort of a cost-benefit analysis when they decide that. So let's say you really want your family to have access to your emails or some other type of online asset. If you don't take actions into your hands presently, they'll be forced to go through these uncertain legal waters or uncertain processes that are constantly changing from these companies, I should say. And they may not have the will to follow through.
Or I'm thinking the reverse could be true. You know, people online form communities that are often just as close to them as their families are. And there have been cases where someone is a blogger and they have followers online. They suddenly pass. People figure it out. But then the blog disappears and the family has taken it off. But the online family fights to get it back on because they want the work of that person to be online in perpetuity. So if you're the kind of person who wants your online family to be able to have access to your writings, you have to request that as well.
Well, absolutely. I believe you're referencing there's one fairly popular case, Leslie Harpold. She was an early blogger, and she had developed quite the community online. And as I understand it, her family wasn't necessarily proud of the work she was doing.
They wanted to remember her as they knew her and not as the whatever the blog was.
Absolutely. And in that situation, there are numerous individuals who have offered their family, hey, can we create an archive of her sites? Can we republish her work? And her family kindly declines each time. But the real disconnect is that as a blogger, Leslie lived a very open life and shared many things with her online community. And at her death, those things were slowly taken away from the online community by her family. And without any designation from Leslie as to what should have happened, and to our knowledge, there is none, it's hard to say what should have happened.
That's Evan Carroll. He and John Romano are co-authors of Your Digital Afterlife. It's about what happens to your digital life after you've died. Things like emails, Facebook postings, blogs. And Evan Carroll, you know, unless one of the cases we talked about happens, you know, a parent tries to get information, how would a website like Facebook even know you've died?
That's just the thing. Facebook wouldn't know unless your executor or someone in your state actively tells them. Facebook is kind of an interesting case because they allow a Facebook profile to be memorialized, and the proof of death they require is a link to an online obituary. That seems less secure than other accounts that require death certificates. But even with death certificates, there's no one electronic way, one database, where we keep our vital statistics. That's something that we see as a potential change going forward. And when we see this database come about, and I would imagine that it's still many, many years out, then we'll run into a situation where these online account services may have automated access to this information, and they may be able to take actions specified by the deceased previously once they receive that automated notification.
Yeah.
And if you think about just for a second how big a situation this is going to be for businesses, I mean, the burden of the dead on a company like Google after 20, 30 years is going to be overwhelming. They're going to have to figure out a way basically to start archiving or pulling these counts down.
Yeah.
And folks like Google have a inactivity clause, so accounts are inactive after 90 days and deleted after 180 or something like that. They use that to sort of get around this issue so that they say, well, we'll remove your account if you're inactive. But that's potentially problematic for someone who's passed away and may have some very important things there for their family. It may take them some time to remember those things exist or discover they exist and then start trying to gain access to them.
Boy, you know, it just raises so many questions. I'm thinking, you know, when you find a real tangible manuscript from an author that has not been published, the questions always are, did they mean for them to be published? You know, maybe they hated it. With online material, there's going to be tons of stuff And we don't know what the people who wrote it meant to do with it.
That's exactly right. I know this question of ethics comes up often in the world of libraries and archives, especially in digital archives. I was discussing with someone a situation where they were given an archive of someone's email, a government figure, I believe it was, and there were messages in the draft folder that were not sent, but they were part of the data that was given to the archive. Should the archive show those? That's a situation, if, as an individual, if that scares you, it's probably a good motivation to make your wishes known.
Just a quick question about costs. Some of these sites that will manage your digital demise are free, but we read about a man who is setting aside money so that his blogs and websites can be curated after he dies. Is that common, to pay someone to do it?
Yeah, actually, we're playing with this word forever, right? So people are starting to use it. And forever is a tricky word. I mean, we think about the web evolving and changing completely every 5 or 10 years. And, but services are starting now that say, we will keep your content forever. And a lot of these, what they do is when you pay them, they actually take some of the money that you pay them and they put it into a trust, which they say will, you know, ensure the long-term survivability of your content. And they also have a lot of other issues to contend with, like the idea of file formats. You know, an image file is a JPEG, let's say, today, but in 15 years, we might be on some other image file format. So you're going to have to pay these people not only to host your content, but also to make sure that that content is constantly updated and reformatted into the new format so that people can actually access it.
Yeah. Well, much of what we've talked about is about privacy, but some of it is a wish for immortality. There's even a website called Virtual Immortality. What happens is there's an avatar supposedly with your personality that lives on after you die. The more information of yours that is put in, the more it sort of becomes you. Is that a part of this movement as well, that people do want to live on after they die online?
I really honestly think that we're going to start redefining the way people think about death. Because, yes, you're right. There are now two services that have these online avatars. And right now it's sort of an arduous process to program them. But all these companies are working on ways where they can just quietly listen in. Like every time that you put something onto your Facebook profile, or every time you send an email, or every time that you push out a tweet, if this avatar is quietly listening to all of that and building up a profile over you over decades, they can actually be pretty accurate in predicting the way that you would respond to questions. And it's totally a way that I think people are going to try to sort of cheat death in a little bit, in a minor way, is to try to basically have something left behind. And if you think about just the way people grieve, I mean, death has always been this very final moment, like defined moment in life. And the idea that you could go back home after the funeral and start having a conversation with a virtualized, you know, image of your loved one is kind of an odd concept to deal with.
Odd is just begins to describe it. Or, you know, get an email from them 20 days after they've died. There's the site Death Switch, one of many that will send messages to your friends and family after you're gone.
Yes, that's a category that we affectionately call posthumous email services. Literally, you go and you sign up for an account and you write messages to be delivered. You designate a group of verifiers or angels or people that can, when you know 6 of 8, say you've passed away, they go ahead and send the emails. Or you have others where if you don't respond to emails, kind of like a dead man's switch, if you don't respond after a certain period of time to emails they send you, they assume you've passed away. But what I really like about posthumous email services is that they give you an opportunity to put the last word in. And, you know, a lot of times when I say that, people think, well, you know, I'd like to get the last word in that old dispute. But it's also an opportunity to say, whatever happened right at the end, I want you to know I really cared about you, and you didn't get to come over and play chess with me that week. That's okay.
Right. That's Evan Carroll with John Romano, co-author of Your Digital Afterlife. They're both creators of the website, thedigitalbeyond.com. We'll link you up at hearandnow.org. John and Evan, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
A pleasure.